Well, that's fine. Thank you. Here's we have all of the timing difficulties surmounted, and we'll proceed to hear the last case of the day, which is State versus Chase. Ms. Keller, you're with us this morning. You may approach and you may proceed when you're ready. And we do ask that you not be masked while you're talking to us. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Becca Keller. I'm the assistant public defender and attorney for the defendant appellant Amanda Chase. I'm here this morning on an interlocutory appeal on a motion for absolute discharge based on statutory speedy trial rights. My initial motion did mention constitutional violations, but it was not argued at all below, so I've then waived that argument. I'm going to focus then on the statutory argument. The court is clearly aware of the timeline in this case. It's been very lengthy briefing on that. What I would note is that the complaint was filed October 2019, but speedy trial statutorily did not trigger until January 21st of 2020 when Ms. Chase was arrested on the private warrant. Because the crime is an underlying crime, domestic violence, where an element of that crime is a domestic partnership, speedy trial would not start until that January 21st date. Based on that, the last day that the state could try Ms. Chase was July 21st, 2020. In this case, we had a trial set for April 6th, 2020. That day came and went without explanation, without hearing. In fact, to this date, I have seen no order continuing or canceling that trial for or giving any explanation for it.
So it was sort of canceled by operation of no one showing up?
Essentially, yes, by impliedly when no one appeared. We did have three hearings in this case, one before that April 6th date. Now, that date of March 26th was supposed to be a cleanup date. That's what in Douglas County County Court is a last conference to get your jury instructions and your motions in limine, et cetera. Instead, a very brief hearing was held where another jury trial status check was set into May. No explanation was given, no record made at that time. No commentary from the court, no information from defense or defendant or from the state at that time.
Any objection to the setting in May?
No.
You're not here today to argue that no one had any idea why the continuance had been granted.
I am.
You are?
I am. I think it's very clear in our case law that the record in the case is what counts. And the record in this case is devoid of a national pandemic. There's no explanation why we couldn't have had a trial. There's no orders from the court explaining why trial was canceled, why additional status hearings were necessary.
Let's clarify what you say is in the record. You're saying nothing, there's no information at the time of the continuances in the record, correct?
Correct.
That the motion for discharge, there was information.
There were exhibits offered, yes.
Okay. So the record does have information about the pandemic in it, just not at the time it continues. Just to clarify what
yes,
your argument
and
is.
That's fair. The record as a whole does include some of that information. My position is that it's insufficient to find by preponderance of the evidence that good cause could be found in this case. But I also would like to focus the court's attention to the fact that we had 6 months of a silent record. Where then the state offered exhibits that claimed hindsight rules and the judge must have had good cause this whole time. Clearly, it's not clear. The record is not clear, does not state that.
Is there any statutory requirement that the court sua sponte continuous order requires any kind of reasoning at that point in time?
Not that I'm aware of. There is case law that in order for that continuance to constitute good cause, the state has to produce evidence of good cause. And it's my argument that if a continuance is ordered without explanation or evidence of good cause, then it doesn't count against the defendant.
Did the evidence that was adduced at the hearing on discharge purport to address the periods of time at which the continuances were granted. The evidence talked about when
some of the
directed time. Health measures were entered, that sort of thing.
Most of the time, yes.
Okay.
However, I believe that affidavits and it, the court in this case did not take judicial notice of anything. So what we're limited to were the exhibits offered and the county court's order with specific findings. And those are limited to affidavits and directed health measures that I think are insufficient. I think this court has previously held in State v. Taylor that affidavits alone do not meet the preponderance of the evidence standard. So the state is obligated to do something more in each case to create a record from, I mean, it's the state's obligation to bring a defendant to trial within 6 months, but from the moment the information is filed is my position that it's their obligation to make sure a record exists to support that excludable time. I think the Baird case is a good example of a silent record or a record that kind of existed and no evidence was adduced at the motion discharge hearing. I think the better case comparatively to this is the one from this court in July, Coombs, where the state was not obligated to present any evidence at the motion discharge hearing because the record as a whole was sufficient for the finding of good cause, because the record for year had information for the court of why continuances were necessary, why there was good cause, why there was consent. In this case, we have absolutely no information until the motion discharge hearing. And it's my position that that's too little too late. That information was readily available in March and April. It was not offered.
If the court is continuing a scheduled trial date sua sponte without a hearing, how's the state supposed, when is the state supposed to offer evidence of good cause?
I don't think that it's impossible for the state to request a hearing to present that evidence or to ask that the record remain open that they present such evidence.
But even that would be after the continuance is granted. So
yes.
When does it become too late? You're saying at the time of the discharge hearing it's too late, but sometime after the continuance is apparently okay. How do we determine when it becomes too little too late?
Well, I think that courts entering these orders, and it's, I think, primarily an issue in a pandemic like this, where there's been orders issued pretty freely in a lot of cases, although in this case that didn't even happen. The state or the court is allowed to continue a trial on its own motion. And I'm not disputing that, but if the state wants it to count for good cause, if they want it to attribute some excludable time to the defendant, there needs to be something else on the record. And especially in this case, and the facts in this case, we don't have it. We have a very, very bare record.
What triggers the burden to show? I mean, what has to happen for them to know they have to go forward with they put on their evidence?
I think that one option is once an order is entered continuing a trial, that a hearing be requested to establish outside of the judge's own personal knowledge what basis there was for a continuance.
Did your client object to any of the three sua sponte motion for continuance to put anyone on notice that this might be a question?
No, and the complication in that case with that is the journal entries from the court and all three of the, or two of the three continuances erroneously stated that it was on the motion of defense. At all times, Ms. Chase was requesting that the case be set for a jury trial. The journal entries were incorrect, and that was not corrected until the order denying the motion for discharge.
Did your client reach out to object to those orders for being inaccurate?
Not until the motion of discharge hearing.
So is it your position that the state should just, with respect to every moment that passes in a case, be sort of on notice that the defendant may move for absolute discharge at some point and they ought to have their decks in a row in case it should happen?
Yes, I think on the flip side, I cannot file a motion to discharge unless I can establish from the record that exists that there's already been a violation. So if there's no record to support a violation, I can't file that motion in the first place.
Well, then prevent you from filing it here.
Well, the record to me shows that a violation occurred because the record was bare of any COVID, any pandemic, any continuances that fit under 1207.4.
But if the state were to treat each day that passes as a potentially excludable moment and offer evidence throughout the trial to show good cause or ask for judicial notice or something, isn't that asking an awful lot in a case where the defendant may never move for absolute discharge?
I think hypothetically, yes. But in practicality, consents to continuances happen regularly. Motions on to suppress, for in limine, all happen, and that creates a record that I can rely on before filing a motion to discharge. That doesn't put any additional obligation on the state during the course of the speedy period when there is a hearing, a recorded hearing of defendant consenting to continuance. When there's a filed motion to suppress, that tolls speedy. In all those instances, we have a clear record that doesn't put any additional burden on the state. Now, this is a unique situation because there were no suppression issues and motions in limine were filed just before the motion to discharge. But I think that the possibility of good cause is new. I think this, all it being all encompassing for a lot of people's statutory speedy trial timelines is kind of a new question for this court. But I think that if court is being continued without explanation and the state is worried about their speedy clock, it's their obligation to create a record before the motion discharge hearing.
I beg your pardon. I do have a question. I see that we're beyond your time. If a defendant believes that the sua sponte continuances are not valid, and more particularly, at what point does the defendant bring this to the court's attention?
I don't think this is a situation where the continuances were not valid. My argument is that they do not count as excludable against the defendant under 4D because there's no evidence to support the court found good cause in issuing the continuances.
But I think the question remains the same. If the perception of the defendant is they're not valid as a basis for excludable time, what obligation or what mechanism would the defendant bring? Just say we're looking at the calendar. None of these sua sponte continuances are valid in our view for excludable purposes, and make the motion to discharge on that basis at that time.
That's what I did in this case, although I will admit that objecting to those continuances at those hearings is probably the better course of action. The reality is in the county court in Douglas County, things move pretty quickly. Each of those hearings was maybe 3 to 5 minutes long. I probably should have asserted myself better, but I didn't have much opportunity to discuss with the court what was going on. I mean, anyway. There's no other questions. I'd ask the court to reverse the district court order affirming the county court. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time did we take the appellant over time? And we'll add that time on to the state's time. Ms. Faust, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General, representing the Appalachian State of Nebraska. As we're talking about, this is another COVID-19 speedy trial case, but regarding only the statutory right to speedy trial. This case involves two periods of time that are in dispute. The first is for the court's May 28th continuance, which I believe that Chase absolutely consented to. But and that's in my brief, but as the main discussion is about the COVID time, I will move on to that period of time. The primary difference between this case and Brown's is that here the court did not say at the time of the March 26th, May 28th, and June 11th continuances that it could not hold Chase's jury trial because of the pandemic. The trial had been scheduled for April 6th and rescheduled at the June 11th jury trial status check for August 10th, with voir dire to begin August 3rd. We know that the court's continuances were because of the pandemic, because it said so in its order denying discharge. And I assume that it didn't find it necessary to say the reason at the time of the continuances, because everyone there knew that we were in the middle of a, or actually beginning of a deadly global pandemic. And Chase certainly didn't seek an explanation for any of the continuances. For example, trial was scheduled to begin April 6th. At the March 26th jury trial status check hearing, the court continued the case for a full 2 months to May 28th for another status check. And Chase said nothing. No question about what about my trial next week? Why so long for another status check? Nothing. And that's because she knew it was being continued because of the pandemic. And her failure to object is absolutely a factor to consider in determining whether it was, there was good cause to exclude time under 4F. Another way we know that Chase and her counsel knew the reason for the continuances is because of the petition that the Douglas County Public Defender, whose office represents Chase, signed to restrict public access to the courts because of the pandemic, which I'll get to more in a moment. But in short, the state's evidence was about the pandemic because the court's continuances were because of the pandemic. Chase argues, like Brown and all the others, that Baird requires the state to present evidence of good time at the time of the court's continuances. Obviously, I just agree for the reasons I stated before. Finally, regarding whether the state met its burden to prove that the period from March 26th to June 30th should be excluded under 4F for good cause, in my brief and in here today, I focus on April 6th to May 17th, 2020, because that is the time that the Douglas County courts closed with limited public access because of the pandemic. Included within the state's evidence was a county court order restricting public access to the Douglas County courts and letters about the Chief Justice granting restricted public access to the Douglas County courts from April 6th to May 17th. Once again, I ask that this court take judicial notice of facts found in the argument section of my brief detailing the restricted public access request, which can be found on this court's website on in the April 2nd petition.
Did your brief request us to take judicial notice? Or is that something you're adding today?
Well, it's in the brief and I argue judicial notice and I said these sources are appropriate for judicial notice, but to the extent to say I request you take judicial notice, I'm saying that today.
All right, thank you.
My brief put obviously put the opponents today on notice, and so they could have filed reply briefs responding to it, and obviously can respond today. You will see that the petition requested permission to close the Douglas County courts for an initial 2 weeks, with the understanding that an extension may be necessary to allow a thorough cleaning of the buildings in order to protect the health and safety of employees and the public from COVID-19. It was not an actual closure. The courts would stay operational with 5 conditions set forth in the petition, and holding jury trials didn't fit those conditions and actually would have been completely contrary to the request in and of itself. As I said before, good cause is a substantial reason, one that affords a legal excuse. It has to be good cause to exclude a period of time for the reason of the pandemic when all relevant actors, the district court presiding court judge, the county court presiding court judge, the chief justice, the county attorney, the public defender, the building administrator, the mayor of Omaha, they all agree that it's not safe to hold a jury trial during this time in Douglas County because of the pandemic. And again, I think it's important to remember that still so much was unknown at that time, as this court said in Camacho, specifically referencing July of 2020. This was March to June of 2020. There are no further questions. We ask you from the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Paz. Ms. Keller, your rebuttal time has already passed, but to the extent that Ms. Paz expanded upon or made a formal request for judicial notice, the court would allow you 30 seconds to respond to that request. that we take judicial notice of certain things alluded to in her brief. Do you wish to be heard on the request that we take judicial notice? Please come forward and very good. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. The only point I'd add to the argument of judicial notice is that the court's own personal knowledge is not relevant to the case, and I believe this court has ruled in Carroll v. Gould just at the end of 2020 that the court may take judicial notice of a public record or a public fact. And as Ms. Faust stated, the many of these administrative orders are publicly accessible. However, Carroll v. Gould does say that you can take judicial notice of their existence and then when they were filed and that they're there, but the contents still must be proven up by the state. That's how I read that case anyway. So I'd ask the court that while you can find that there are these directed health measures and administrative orders, the contents haven't been proven by preponderance of the evidence by the state in this case.
Thank you very much. The appeal is submitted, counsel are excused, and we are adjourned for the day.